Hello, I'm Guy Ridihoff from Science Magazine. In this podcast, we'll be discussing an article published in the 13th November issue of Science that reviews the function of telomeres. Telomeres are structures that protect the ends of linear chromosomes and feature in the 2009 Nobel Prize for Physiology and Medicine. The article was written by Titia DeLange, the Leon Hess Professor at Rockefeller University, New York. I spoke with Dr. DeLange about the role of telomeres in mammalian chromosomes. Hi, Titia.
Hi, Guy.
Most bacteria have circular chromosomes, whereas most eukaryotes have linear chromosomes. Linear chromosomes come with problems, though, and I was just wondering if you could tell us what those problems are.
Linear chromosomes probably have advantages for eukaryotes. We don't really know what the advantages are, but the fact is that they create two major problems. And we've known for a long time that there was something special about the ends of chromosomes. The early work of geneticists like Muller and McClintock, who about 75 years ago were able to break chromosomes and see what happened to broken chromosomes, came to the conclusion that there was something special about the ends of our linear chromosomes. And in fact, Muller coined the term telomere for the Greek word telos, for end. And he deduced that chromosomes required these telomeres at their ends in order to be stable. But the nature of the telomere and exactly what its functions were, that was unclear from their work. Much later, it became clear that one problem with having linear chromosomes and having DNA in involves DNA replication. And the way DNA replication is organized works great for circular chromosomes, but it doesn't quite manage the duplication of linear chromosomes. The last few nucleotides, the last few base pairs of a linear chromosome can't be replicated by the DNA replication machinery, and therefore eukaryotic cells have to solve that problem. If it's not solved, chromosome ends would gradually wither away, and in the end, after many divisions, there would be no chromosome at all. So work in the early 80s revealed that this so-called end replication problem is solved by a telomere-specific reverse transcriptase called telomerase. And this enzyme recognizes the natural ends of chromosomes and then adds specific short repeat sequences to chromosome ends. And in doing so, it elongates the linear DNA ends and makes up for the constant loss of the terminal nucleotides with DNA replication. And this is a very important discovery because it turns out that telomerase plays a key role in human cancer, certain inherited diseases, and other disease states.
The end replication problem isn't the only problem that linear chromosomes face, of course.
Now, there is a second problem, and this problem really wasn't fully realized until work in the 1980s taught us that eukaryotic cells have a very vigilant system with which they monitor the genome for the presence of DNA damage. So there are two different systems in cells that constantly surveys the DNA in chromosomes to detect lesions. And if lesions are detected by either of these two surveillance systems, cells arrest in the cell cycle. And in addition, cells have the ability to then repair these lesions. They use two main repair pathways to repair broken chromosomes. Now, if you think about it, activation of these pathways at the natural ends of chromosomes would be a disaster. If the natural ends of chromosomes would be perceived by the cells as DNA damage, the cells would arrest in the cell cycle. And in addition, if the repair pathways would engage on the natural ends of the chromosome, inappropriate products would occur. So, for instance, one repair pathway just simply glues DNA ends together. And if it would do that at chromosome ends, natural chromosome ends, it would make fusions of different chromosomes, which are unstable, and mitosis. So these kinds of studies illuminated that there is a second problem with having linear chromosomes that I refer to as the end protection problem. So we have the end replication problem. It's basically solved by our knowledge of telomerase. And then there is the end protection problem, which is still a challenge to understand how cells manage to create natural chromosome ends that are not perceived as DNA damage.
So you mentioned that telomeres are long repeats of simple sequences put there by the telomerase enzyme, and that solves the end replication problem, and it solves the end protection problem as well in ways that we don't fully understand.
Yes. So We know that telomerase adds these simple repeats, and these repeats somehow confer resistance to these DNA repair pathways. And the question is, how can this be? It's just a DNA sequence. Why would cells know not to alert their DNA damage response pathways when these repeats are present at the ends of DNA? And so a lot of work has taken place over the past 20 years to try to understand how this works. And there are two components of the story. One component are the proteins that bind to these repeats. So once telomerase had evolved, the great thing about having such an enzyme in eukaryotes is that it will add exactly the same sequence to all chromosome ends. And once you have evolved a system by which all telomeres have the same sequence, you can evolve transacting factors, proteins that recognize that sequence, and then allow cells, based on the presence of these proteins at chromosome ends, to know that these are sites they shouldn't repair and that shouldn't alert their DNA damage response pathways.
You have a marker for the ends of chromosomes.
Yes, indeed. And so once you have that marker, you can imagine that you build up systems by which you use that marker to enable cells to make the distinction between broken DNA and natural chromosome ends. So the DNA does two things. It attracts a specific set of proteins to the chromosome end, and those proteins then help, we propose, to change the structure of the DNA. What we found by actually directly looking at the telomeres from human and mouse cells by electron microscopy in collaboration with Jack Griffith at the University of North Carolina is that the DNA is often not linear, but rather it's looped back, and the end of the telomeric strand, the very end of the chromosome, is tucked into the double-stranded part of the telomere.
Almost like it forms a lasso of DNA.
Yes, it's a lariat-like structure where the end is literally hidden. And you might imagine then that pathways in the cell that use proteins that detect DNA ends that are helping the cell to find broken chromosomes, that those pathways, because the telomere is hidden, aren't activated by the telomeric DNA in this T-loop structure.
So potentially there's a double layer of protection. The complex of proteins you mentioned that are recruited to all telomere ends through the simple sequences, and also the structure that's induced to form by, presumably, the sequences themselves and the proteins that bind.
Yes, and the T-loop structure depends on the fact that the sequence at the telomere is repetitive. So the strand invasion that helps in the formation of the T-loop can only occur within the same DNA sequence because telomerase synthesizes so many of these short repeats onto chromosome end. The end can find the very same sequence a little bit into the chromosome and tuck itself in there.
So going back to the protein complex, we know a little bit about how the protein complex that binds telomeres protects them from the cell systems that are constantly scanning for broken DNA. Could you tell us a little bit about what we know?
Yes. So how does this protein complex that binds to these simple repeats solve the end protection problem? It's a multi-subunit complex, and we know there's six different proteins that only binds to the telomeric DNA made by telomerase. This is a good thing, of course, because you don't want this complex bound anywhere else in the chromosomes there. And by the way, we call this complex sheltering, because we think it shelters the telomeres from the DNA damage response. So how would that work? And we know that different components in the complex are dedicated to the different pathways that threaten telomeres. So in principle, there are four pathways that telomeres need to worry about. There are two different DNA damage response pathways that alert cells to the presence of DNA breaks in the chromosomes. They are called the ATM kinase pathway and the ATR kinase pathway. And then there are two different DNA repair pathways. And it turns out that sheltering has a dedicated protein that takes care of one of the two signaling pathways, the ATM kinase pathway, and is the same component very important for one of the two repair pathways. How do we know this? By simply removing the gene for this protein from mouse fibroblast cells by genetic means, and then we can observe what goes wrong at the telomeres and which signaling pathways are activated. So if you remove this protein, which is called TRF2, the cells now make the mistake that they perceive their natural chromosome ends as sites of DNA damage. They activate the ATM kinase pathway, which leads to cell cycle rest, and they busily try to repair what they perceive as damaged DNA end with a repair pathway called the non-homologous end joining pathway, which is basically gluing DNA ends together. And what we see is that all the chromosomes start fusing together. So how would a simple component, one protein in the sheltering complex, be able to prevent all this from happening? Our model is that TRF2 does this by helping telomeres to form the T-loop structure. When TRF2 binds to telomeric DNA in experiments in vitro, it can form a T-loop-like structure. Whether it does so in vivo, we still don't know. When we take TRF2 away, the T-loop opens up, and then the end binding activities that are in the cell to look for broken DNA ends can now see the telomere because it's in an open configuration. These end binding activities can then bind to the telomere terminus and both activate the ATM kinase, which is dependent on an end binding activity, and initiate this repair pathway, which is also dependent on an end binding activity. It's a very simple architectural and very elegant solution to the end protection problem by which the telomeric DNA recruits a protein. That protein then helps the telomere to fold itself up and tuck the ends in. And now in that situation, proteins that are around in the cell that look for DNA ends are blind to the telomere terminus.
So the T-loop hides the ends of the telomeres and blocks end-binding factors, thereby preventing them misconstruing what, of course, would look like a break otherwise, because it's certainly an end of DNA. You also mentioned that there's a second signaling pathway.
Yes, there's a second signaling pathway that helps cells to take note of DNA breaks and other DNA lesions, the ATR kinase pathway. This pathway isn't activated by DNA ends per se, but is activated by single-stranded DNA. So whenever the double helix is damaged, there are enzymes that could eat one of the two strands away. And what then occurs in the genome are regions of single-stranded DNA. And this is also, of course, for cells, a very good marker for trouble in the chromosomes. And it activates the ATR kinase pathway. It uses a protein that binds to single-stranded DNA called RPA that then codes the single-stranded DNA and activates the second signaling pathway. And the second signaling pathway does much the same as what the ATM kinase pathway does. It activates a set of proteins that arrest the cells in the cell cycle. Now, this pathway is also a real problem at telomeres because telomeres have constitutive single-stranded DNA. They have a long overhang, a protrusion at the very terminus of single-stranded DNA. And it's, in fact, this protrusion that is important to make the T-loop. It's this protrusion that strand invades into the double-stranded part of the DNA. So how would then cells avoid activating this ATR kinase pathway that constantly looks for single-stranded DNA? And we know that in this case, there's a different component of sheltering called POT1. It's the only component in sheltering that binds to single-stranded DNA. The other components are logged onto the double-stranded DNA. So we know that POT1 removal, again through genetic means in mouse fibroblasts, activates the ATR kinase pathway. And we know that upon POT1 removal, the RPA single-stranded DNA binding protein that activates the ATR kinase pathway arrives at telomeres. So the model that is now favored is that POT1 blocks the activation of the ATR kinase pathway by taking the place of RPA. As long as POT1 is sitting on the single-stranded DNA, RPA won't have the ability to bind there, and therefore the ATR kinase will never get activated. It's literally masking the presence of single-stranded DNA by coding it so that the sensor that looks for single-stranded DNA cannot take note of the presence of this part of the telomere.
One curious thing about telomeres is that not only is there the sheltering complex and T-loops and we're starting to understand the role, certainly, of the sheltering complex and how it prevents telomeres being misconstrued as damage. There's also the curious phenomena that proteins that the sheltering complex and T-loops presumably protect the telomeres from are actually part of the telomeres themselves. So the proteins that potentially cause problems are right there at the telomeres, as part of the telomere.
Yeah, this has puzzled the field enormously, because the early simple models were along the lines of, you've parked this protein complex on the telomeres, and that then protects the telomere from binding of any of the DNA damage response factors or any of the DNA repair factors to the telomere. So it was an early version of some kind of a plastic cap over the chromosome end. And that turns out not to be correct, because in fact, many of the same factors that threaten the integrity of the telomere and that should be silenced at the telomere are found there. So it's an enormous dilemma. What are these proteins doing at the telomere? They're clearly not doing anything harmful, and many of these proteins are in fact recruited to the telomere by sheltering itself, giving a hint that they are doing something useful at the telomere. So what are they doing? And this is an enormous challenge for the field to sort out how sheltering uses the various enzymatic activities of these proteins in a useful way at telomeres, while at the same time preventing these proteins from doing something harmful at the telomere.
Well, clearly there are many puzzles left to unpick in understanding the role of telomeres in protecting the ends of our linear chromosomes. I expect we can look forward to more exciting advances in the future, and I hope that science will report on them. I'd like to broaden the scope of the interview at this point and ask you, what attracted you to this area of research?
I became very interested in biology when there was an article in a Dutch newspaper, a good newspaper, that, like the New York Times, had a science section, and I saw a photograph of a chromosome. I'm not sure what it actually was, but I rather suspect that it was one of Uli Lemley's early EM pictures of chromosomes, and I was completely enthralled and fascinated. And I've always wanted to work on chromosomes ever since that time.
The Nobel Prize for Physiology and Medicine was awarded for research on telomeres to Elizabeth Blackburn and Carol Greider and Jack Szostak. It's the first time that a Nobel Prize has been awarded to two women at the same time.
This year in Stockholm is going to be very special, because it's not only Carol Greider and Liz Blackburn who will be taking the stage, but also Ada Jonat.
Of course, you're a researcher in this field and you're also a woman. Do you have any thoughts on career paths for women in science?
I think the career path for women in the biological sciences is still not as smooth as it is for men. My grandmother got her PhD in biology in 1911. In those days, you could get your PhD by finding a new anatomical feature. I have her thesis, and she found a little hole in the peritoneum of turtles.
Of course, the fact that she was a woman did have subsequent ramifications for her career.
Yeah, she couldn't take a full-time job at the University of Amsterdam. That would have been the normal next step for her, because she had done very well in her PhD, and she had won a prize. I have it. It's a big gold medal from the city of Amsterdam. She must have been pretty good, but she got married to a chemist, and so she had children soon thereafter, and she wanted to work part-time, so she couldn't take an academic position. And 100 years later, I think women still struggle to reach the top ranks at most institutions. And I think as long as we can't guarantee the same chances for a woman and a man in my lab who get their PhD next year, we have a lot of work to do.
Well, this is a situation that will hopefully continue to improve. I'm certain that your grandmother would have approved of your choice of vocation and would have been delighted with how successful you've been. And I must say, thank you very much, Titia, for spending time with us to discuss how telomeres work.
Well, it was my pleasure. Thank you, Guy.
For more details on the function of telomeres in protecting the ends of our linear chromosomes, see Titia de Lange's Viewpoint article, How Telomeres Solve the End Protection Problem, in the 13th November issue of Science magazine. For more on women and the 2009 Nobel Prize, there's an interview with four of the five female winners in the October 30th issue of Science magazine. Thanks for listening.